Now, back to your turn on 1330 WEBY, Northwest Florida's Talk Radio. The phone lines are open, so call in and join the conversation at 623-1330.
Thanks so much for tuning in. If you've just tuned in, my name's Renee Giacchino. I'm Corporate Counsel for the Center for Individual Freedom. And as always, I encourage you to visit our website at www.cfif.org. If you happen to miss a program, you can click on the Freedom Cast, which we put up there in podcast version, the interviews that are conducted right here on WEBY, Milton, Pensacola, Gulf Breezes, Northwest Florida's Talk Radio. Joining us now on the program is Tim Lee. He's the Center for Individual Freedom's Director of Legal and Public Affairs. It's wonderful to have him back on the program. Tim, thanks so much for joining us again.
No, thank you for having me. I hope you guys are all well down in Florida.
We're a little wet right now, but that's okay. We needed the rain. We just finished talking with Quinn Hillier, and obviously the topic for today, all eyes are on the Supreme Court, and we're going to keep those eyes on the Supreme Court in our continued conversation with you. More particularly, I'd asked you to come on the program to talk to us about the Supreme Court's the term that just ended, the October 2008 to 2009 term. But before we do that, before you give us a little bit of an overview of, you know, the big cases that the court heard and decided in the past term, and maybe a sneak peek at what you might expect to see or you know that's already on the calendar for next year, if we could for a minute just continue the conversation about Sotomayor, because you are an expert on the Second Amendment, and it's a topic that we didn't get an opportunity to discuss while Quinn Hillier was on the program, but that is Sotomayor's record on gun rights. What are you hearing on this issue? What can you enlighten us about?
Well, her record on the gun issue is very, very troubling. As most listeners know, the Second Amendment confers an individual right to keep and bear arms. It has nothing to do with a militia. The Second Amendment itself uses the term the people to keep and bear arms, and nowhere else in the Constitution is the term the people used in some sort of collective sense. It's always an individual right. Unfortunately, Judge Sotomayor has ruled that it's not a fundamental right, and she is also ruling that, has ruled that it does not apply to states. And in case some listeners are confused about that, what the Heller decision, which came out last year, said is that the federal government in Washington, D.C., cannot infringe too greatly upon the individual right to keep and bear arms. The question remains is, are the states also prohibited from that, or does the Second Amendment just prohibit the federal government from infringing upon those rights? And so it's an issue that will probably come before the Supreme Court, and unfortunately Judge Sotomayor, in her ruling, believes that it does not. So she seems pretty hostile towards the Second Amendment, and hopefully that view will be corrected before the Supreme Court next year or soon thereafter, whether or not she's on it.
And I don't mean to put you, you know, in the hot seat, but continuing with Sotomayor, we've talked about the Second Amendment. Let's talk about the First Amendment. What kind of record, if you're familiar at all with it, do you think she has on issues of the First Amendment?
You know, we at the Center for Individual Freedom have actually done a little bit of research on that, and she's actually fairly limited in her rulings on that. So there's not a whole lot of meat out there. The important thing with regard to the First Amendment is that in September they're going to probe very deeply into some of the McCain-Feingold types of issues.
Okay.
There's a case that came before the court this year that a lot of your listeners might have heard of, dealing with essentially a web video of dealing with Hillary Clinton. And the argument was whether or not that constituted a political campaign documentary and therefore fell within the ambit of McCain-Feingold type laws. The Supreme Court, instead of making a decision on that case, actually decided to postpone it and hear more about the case because it appears that they're going to delve even deeper into the issue of whether this is all even constitutional in the first place. So that's very roughly speaking, but I think the indication is that it's good news for people who believe in First Amendment free speech rights, because it looks like they are perhaps preparing to overturn the McConnell case, which validated these McCain-Feingold types of laws in the first place.
And so, that's a Citizens United case, Tim, that you're talking about?
Yeah, and it could be very, very good news. You know, you certainly don't want to predict these things, and Justice Kennedy is always very unpredictable, and under the Roberts courts, they're very incremental, so they could split the baby, they could you know, do any number of things, but the fact that they're looking at the deeper issue of whether this is even constitutional is, I think, indicative of good news.
And that being said, I mean, Sotomayor, and we'll get to this issue as well, whether or not she even will be on the bench, assuming she's confirmed, would she be on the bench by December when, you know, they start their next term in October? A fresh round of arguments start on September 9th, I understand, in that case. Would she be the swing vote that would decide it one way or the other, do you think? Or do you think Kennedy would remain the swing vote on that issue? And could she take up that issue?
The swing vote on that,
because
she'd be replacing Souter, obviously, who is not very dependable on a lot of issues, but
This
being one of them. So, yes, she would be presumably on the court if the vote is held before then and she's confirmed. I'm not sure that she would make the difference in this case. I certainly hope not.
Okay, and from a process standpoint, does she get to even weigh in on that case if it's a carryover from the previous term?
You know what? Actually, I think I see where your question is going here. Because they heard the case a little bit this year, perhaps not, because it would be before the October term starts. And
right.
So yeah, I think you're correct on that, actually, yeah.
Okay. All right, we're going to go ahead and take a call. Randy, it's your turn.
Yes, good afternoon. Quinn, we all know that there's four justices right now that vote politically and four that vote constitutionally, with Kennedy being the swing vote. Now, Sotomayor is obviously going to be, you know, the same or, if anything, worse than who she's replacing. But are we in any danger when we talk about the Second Amendment rights right now of Justice Kennedy switching sides and going back to the against the Constitution vote that the four made in the Heller decision? I mean, are we even, I don't know that much about Justice Kennedy. And he wields an enormous amount of power in this country right now.
And he loves it. I think he loves it. Don't you agree, Randy? I mean, I think he loves it. Well, what are your thoughts?
Well, are you asking with specific regard to the Heller Second Amendment case?
Start there. Yeah, just start there, and you can speak generally, too. Sure.
You know, all sorts of bad things can happen, and when Justice Kennedy behaves as he does, I think he recognizes that he's perhaps the most powerful man in the country, with all due respect to President Obama. I doubt it, though, because the times where Kennedy seems to be less predictable, they have to do with individual rights. And I think in this case, he's much more willing to say that individual rights need to be respected against the states, and this would qualify as that, because it's a Second Amendment right to keep and bear arms without state interference. And so it doesn't seem as much the type of case where he sort of flip-flops left and right. A good example of that might be on the environmental case that came up a couple of years ago. And, you know, there was this definition of waterways and whether they had to be navigable. And, you know, under his ruling, a puddle out in your front yard could almost be qualified as a navigable waterway. So sometimes he's undependable on things like that, or with some of the terrorist detainees. But when it comes to recognizing individual rights and their protection against infringement by the federal or state governments, he tends to be a little bit, he tends to lean more towards the individual rights view. And so I think in the Second Amendment Heller case, he's probably going to be fairly stable on that.
Well, and here's a little more data that I came across today in researching for our conversation. Adam Liptick, who writes for the New York Times, he had a column that was out on July the 1st that, you know, I found very enlightening. It's called Roberts Court Shifts Right Tipped by Kennedy. And in there he wrote, quote, whether he will succeed depends, and he's talking about whether or not Chief Justice John Roberts will succeed in getting the court to, you know, move a little bit further to the right. Whether he will succeed depends on Justice Anthony M. Kennedy, the court's swing vote, and there is reason to think that the Chief Justice has found a reliable ally when it counts. And now he quotes Thomas Goldstein, obviously a famous SCOTUS watcher. He says, in the important cases, Kennedy ends up on the right, said Thomas C. Goldstein, a student of the court and the founder of SCOTUS Blog, which has compiled comprehensive statistics on the current term. The two justices agreed 86% of the time.
Yeah, the Roberts Court is quickly becoming known for its incrementalism, and I think that Roberts favors that, and I think Kennedy favors that, and that could explain it. And what I mean by incrementalism is they tend to avoid these very sweeping changes in the law. So to give you one example, it's my belief that McCain-Feingold laws violate the Constitution's explicit terms. If I were a justice on the Supreme Court, I, like, say, Justice Scalia, would vote to overturn them as unconstitutional. Instead, what you get under Justice Roberts is a more slow approach, and they come with very narrow rulings, and I think Justice Kennedy likes that. He doesn't like these very broad-based overturning of law. And so Roberts himself, kind of in a political sense almost, is able to sort of paste together these majorities to move very slowly. And it's in a good direction, as I think the article noted that you quoted. You know, I would certainly prefer a little more sweeping change. But, you know, Justice Kennedy, perhaps we should be glad that he's not incrementally going leftward, I guess, is a good way of putting it. But, yeah, it's an interesting observation that Roberts and his sort of take-it-slow approach is finding a pretty welcome audience in Justice Kennedy.
Well, hell may have just froze over because I never thought I would say this, Tim, but the Adam Liptek of the New York Times, a writer for New York Times, agreed wholeheartedly with what you just said. And he wrote, "The court took mainly incremental steps in major cases concerning voting rights, employment discrimination, criminal procedure, and campaign finance. But the Chief Justice's fingerprints were on all of them, and he left clues that the court is only one decision away from fundamental change in many areas of the law." So this incrementalism that you're talking about, I mean, you know, everybody's recognizing it. And you know, it's not necessarily good or bad. I mean, you know, if we get to where we want to go, it may take us a little bit longer to get there. But, you know, like you said, at least we're not going in the opposite direction.
Yeah, and another way of illustrating it is with this reverse discrimination case. Actually, I usually don't use that term, reverse discrimination.
The firefighters case you're talking about, Sotomayor's?
The Sotomayor, the Leachy case,
right.
The New Haven firefighters. That's a good instance, I think, of this incrementalism that we were just talking about. Justice Scalia, as many of your listeners will know, would have gone even further than the majority of the court. The majority of the court did not look at the constitutional issue. What they said is under the Civil Rights Act, which is legislation passed by Congress, New Haven's discrimination was not permissible. But, in my opinion, they should have looked more fundamentally and said this violates the Constitution itself. Instead, what you saw from the court was a more incremental decision saying it violates this legislation, the Civil Rights Act, so we don't even need to reach the decision or the ruling of whether it violates the Constitution. So that's a pretty good example, too. I would have preferred that they go further, like Justice Scalia said in his concurrence, but, you know, we got what we got, and it certainly was more good than bad.
Well, fortunately, the end result was okay.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. All right, we are going to take a quick break. When we come back, we are going to ask Tim to give us the SCOTUS roundup on the October 2008-2009 term, so please stay tuned. We'll be right back after this short break.
Now, back to your turn on 1330 WEBY, Northwest Florida's Talk Radio. The phone lines are open, so call in and join the conversation at 623-1330.
All right, we right here in Milton, Pensacola, Gulf Breeze, and throughout our listening audience, we are very pleased and honored to have Tim Lee with us. He's CFIF's Director of Legal and Public Affairs, and he recently was our eyes and ears on the Supreme Court roundup that was held by the Federalist Society. So if you would, Tim, please update us on the news that you heard while you attended that conference and what kind of things folks were talking about in terms of the cases that were highlighted over the previous term and what we might see in the next term.
Well, the first case I'll bring up is something that you and I had talked about when I came on your show about a year ago discussing the upcoming term. And that was the Navy sonar case, and it was essentially the United States Navy versus the Save the Whale environmentalists. Fortunately, the court came to a good decision, and this time by a 6-3 decision, by the way. But what they ruled is that military training essentially trumps these protected whales, and the dispute had centered upon the Navy's use of this sonar technology that they used to train for anti-submarine warfare. And essentially what the court said was that the Navy have to deploy this sort of anti-submarine force, because otherwise it would jeopardize the safety of the country and the fleet itself, whereas the environmentalists could really only point to this sort of hypothetical harm, and you know, they couldn't identify the types of whales or the number of whales that would be harmed. So it, the Supreme Court came down in favor of the Navy. So that was a good one, and I know it was a case that you and I were anticipating because we discussed it about a year ago.
Right.
In another case, and this one was not so good, the Supreme Court ruled by a 5-4 vote in a case coming out of West Virginia that judges have to step aside from ruling in cases where there were campaign contributions from parties before them. So, for instance, in a lot of states, they elect judges, and they'll have campaigns just like any other candidate for political office. And in this case, you had a donor that owned a company, and they contributed a pretty substantial portion in favor of one of the judges that ultimately made it to the Supreme Court. Now, there was no sort of allegation of impropriety or some sort of backroom deal. And so this really undermines judicial elections. And this, here's why this is important. In a lot of states that don't elect judges, what you get are these panels that recommend judges for appellate courts at the state level and for state Supreme Courts. And what they tend to become are, you know, panels dominated by groups like the ABA. So they obviously lean to the left politically. And what they do is they scratch each other's backs and they, you know, nominate people who sort of run in their circles and who don't rock the boat and essentially go towards this sort of center-left political outlook. You know, judicial elections can be good. In California, they've been good when you had one Supreme Court justice who simply refused to ever accept the death penalty. It allows the people to throw out judges who just aren't doing their jobs. And this case makes it more difficult because it starts to get these McCain-Feingold types of laws into judicial elections. And so that was a very, very bad decision in that regard. There was some of your listeners might have heard of the Wyeth drug case, and this was actually, unfortunately, a bad decision as well, and once again by a 6-3 decision. What had happened is a drug maker complied with all federal laws in creating its warning label. But then the medics who applied the drug, you know, they went about it wrong and said, well, the warning label wasn't quite strong enough, and they sued under state law. And this case should have been thrown out because the drug maker sells in all 50 states, and they shouldn't have to comply with some spaghetti bowl of regulations out there. That's why we have some of these federal standards under the Commerce Clause. But unfortunately, the Supreme Court came to the opposite conclusion and said that individual state laws can be held against some of these interstate drug makers, and so that's really going to hurt in terms of pharmaceutical research and innovation out there. It was a very, very unfortunate decision in that regard. So, you know, we certainly wish they'd come the other way on that. But, you know, it overall, it was a pretty good term. The case that obviously garners the most attention was the Ricci decision, where Supreme Court nominee Sotomayor was essentially overturned.
Now, do you think that got as much attention because it was Sotomayor's case, or, you know, because it deserved it in its own right?
No, it was actually, well, that certainly exacerbated the attention that went to it, but even before Sotomayor was a blip on anybody's radar, this was a case that was looming fairly large. Simply because, you know, these sorts of discrimination cases in our society, it just really can't be tolerated anymore. The 14th Amendment guarantees equal protection of the laws. And, you know, with the type of multicultural society that we have anymore, you really can't even categorize these sorts of things. So, for instance, you know, somebody who's mixed race, you know, what do they put in terms of their ethnic or racial heritage? It just starts to get so confusing, and you just can't have this sort of discrimination going about. And so it was receiving a lot of attention beforehand, but the fact that it rebuked Judge Sotomayor's decision obviously undermines her qualifications for the court, and it certainly brought a lot more attention to it. You know, one other case I'd like to mention, and this was a very, very good decision, and some people have said this is a case that's going to be cited more than any other on down the road in future years. The Supreme Court said that when you're making allegations, you have to be very specific. So, for instance, a lot of times these plaintiff lawyers will just throw together a complaint, and they'll make these wild accusations thinking, well, okay, we don't have to prove it yet. We can bring this to litigation, and we can make these companies or these government agencies provide all this evidence to prove or disprove this claim, and we'll sort of handle that on down the road. It's you know, essentially a trial lawyer's bonanza because they can just file these suits. The Supreme Court said, actually, that you need to be much more specific in terms of the allegations that you're making. They have to have some grounding in fact, and so that was a very good decision, and it might start to cut a little bit into this this jackpot justice trial lawyer bonanza out there. So that was very good, even though it didn't receive a whole lot of attention out there.
It received very little, unfortunately, but thank you for bringing it to our attention. I appreciate it. And, you know, as you were talking, I happened to be looking up some numbers and trying to size up the 2008-2009 Supreme Court term. I think it was Steve maybe who brought up this question. Remarkably, Justice Kennedy voted in the majority 92% of the time this term.
Exactly. It's, you know, it's good in one sense because he oftentimes comes to the right decision, but he's unpredictable, and the court balance should not be sort of centered upon one person like that. It really becomes dangerous because the judicial branch already has too much power, and to put that power in one person, very, very dangerous.
All right, Tim. Well, it's time for us to take a break. We appreciate you spending time. We obviously didn't have time to get to what's already on the calendar for the 2009-2010 term, but of course that's one more reason to have you back later in the summer as it approaches, and maybe you can at that time too. I mean, I don't know, what in 10 seconds sum up for me what you think is going to happen with Sotomayor.
Well, I think she will be confirmed, but I think it's an important teaching session for the American people to realize these are very critical issues, and President Obama needs to be much more careful about the people he appoints.
Thanks, Tim. We appreciate it.